Welcome to Live Daf, your online Daf Yomi Shir.
Shalom Aleichem, welcome back to today's Daf Yomi, which is Shabbos Daf Kuf Nun Dalet. We are right on top of the Amid, and I'm all about discussion regarding Mechamer. Mechamer means if one leads an animal who's doing malacha or carrying a load. So Mechamer is from a lashon of chamor, of donkey. So this is Asur on Shabbos. We learned from a pasuk Lesasa. Kol malacha ato bincha, etc. And the pasuk says ubehem techa. This teaches us one may not do a malacha in conjunction with an animal. You can't lead an animal who's carrying a load and transferring something in Rosh Hashanah on Shabbos. The question here is, do we regard mechamer just like the other malachas, and the consequence would be a chatos if it's done b'shogeg, or if a person does it b'mezit, he will be liable to skila? Do we attribute this masa to the person, and therefore he is chayiv like any other malacha that he would do on Shabbos? Or perhaps we say, this act is attributed to the behemoth himself. He's using the animal to carry the load, but it's not attributed to the person who's leading the animal. Therefore, we can't regard this like an ordinary malacha, and there's no chatas for the owner, there's no skila for the person. So we had those two approaches up until now. Now we're going to have a third approach, somewhere in the middle. Says the Gemara on top of the line, Kufnan Dalad Amar Aleph, Rav Zvid Masni Hachi, Amar Rami Bar Chama. So Rav Zvid had the following version, in the name of Rami Bar Chama, Hamachamar Achar Behema B'Shabbos, if one leads a Behema on Shabbos, carrying a load, B'Shoigig Eini Chayav Chatas. If he does it inadvertently, there's no Chatas to the person. Why? Because we learn from Avodah Zarah, as we had yesterday, Torah compares the entire Torah to Avodah Zarah. Avodah Zarah establishes the formula for chiyuv of chatas. It needs to be done through a masa, through a personal act. This carrying of the load is happening through the behemah. The person himself is not doing the malacha, and therefore there is no chatas if he does mechamer b'shogeg. However, b'mezid, if he orchestrated this thing b'mezid, intentionally, chayiv skila. It is a chayiv skila because the Torah says, etc. And then it says ubehem techa. The pasuk is teaching us that when it comes to skila, we don't exempt this person. So we split shogeg from mezid. Apparently the svar is because shogeg is the liability as a result of the actual act itself, because it was unintentional. There was no premeditation here. Now regarding the actual masa, the behemah is doing it. Therefore, the person himself is pater, as opposed to b'mezid, when he orchestrated it, he did it b'mezid it intentionally. So we attribute it to the person himself. It is as though he did the malacha and he gets killed. Masav Rava. So Rava challenged this. How can you say that although there's no chatas, there will be skila? Can you split the two things? The Mishnah says, Hamachalos HaShabbos, if one is Mechalos Shabbos, Bedovar Shechayoven al Shigigos Echatas. By doing something on which he is chayev chatas, if it's done b'shkoga, Chayoven al Zdoin Eskila. Likewise, if it's done b'mezid, then there will be a skila. So we make a diuk. This Mishnah implies to us, Ha'ein Chayoven al Shigigos Echatas. Apparently, if it is something on which a person is not liable a chatas when it is done inadvertently, Ein chayoven al zdoin eskila. Likewise, there will be no skila when done b'mezid. Apparently, these two things are related, are connected with each other. You can't split one from the other. You can't say, well, mechamer will have skila despite the fact that it doesn't carry a penalty of chatas. Says the Gemara, miktani. Does that really say? Does it say ha'ein chayoven mechulu? Does it say that when there's no chatas, there is no skila? Is that really etched in stone? This is what the Mishnah would mean to say. So we have something on which there is a chatos when it is done b'shkogah. Then, yes, there will be a skila when it is done b'zadin. That's true. But there is some things, there are other things where not necessarily the two things are related. V'yesh davar she'ein chayoven al shigigoseh chatos. But there is something where there is, despite the fact that there's no chatas on the shgaga, the chayoven al zdoin eskila. Nevertheless, there will be a skila on the zadoin when it's done intentionally. My new mechamer. What is an example of this? Mechamer. Where despite the fact that there's no chatas when done by shgaga, there will be a skila punishable by death, by stoning, when done by mezid. So not necessarily are the two things really related with each other. So again, the Mishnah which says, yes, there is something where there is a chatas, and therefore there will be skila. But the diyuk, the inference that you made, is not necessarily so. It could be that there will be other things where, despite the fact that there is no chatas, there will be a skila. And that is mechamer. Continues the Gemara. Rava achva the Rav Mori Baruchel. Rava, the brother of Rav Mori Baruchel. Amrila, some say, avua the Rav Mori Baruchel. So Rav Mori Baruchel, Rachel is the name of his mother. The reason why we attributed him to his mother, Rachel was a daughter of Shmuel. So this daughter of Shmuel was taken into captivity, and there was a guy, his name was Isur, who had relations with her, and this resulted in Rav Mori being born. He was born after this guy had already converted. So he was conceived Shaloi Bekdusha, Hayrosa Shaloi Bekdusha. At that point, his father was not Jewish, but Leidasai, the birth of Rav Mori, was Bekdusha when his father had already become a ger. So that's why the Gemara attributes him to his mother in a derech kavod, out of respect to him, so they used to call Rav Mori Bar Rachel, without mentioning his father. Now the Gemara in Yevamos actually tells us that Rav appointed this person, Rav Mori Bar Rachel, to a position of authority, a minister of some sort of policeman, so a position of authority in the community. Although we know that generally we're not meant to appoint someone into a position of authority over Yisrael, over Yidden, unless he's naturally, a naturally born Jew, as opposed to a ger. But Rav certified him for that position. He says because his mother was Jewish. Rachel, his mother, was Jewish. So despite the fact that his father was a ger, he allowed him to take up this position on account of his mother. So the Gemara says that Rav, who was the brother of Rav Mori Bar Rachel, so that's one version. Va'amrila, some had a different version, that Rava was the father of Rav Mori Bar Rachel. Va'amrila avua, the Rav Mori Bar Rachel. Says the Gemara, Lishna Basra, according to the second version, that Rava was the father of Rav Mori Bar Rachel, and it wasn't this guy, this Issa Giyara fellow. Kasha, this will make things difficult. It's difficult, ha de Rav. This that we know, that Rav Achshari, the Rav Mori Bar Rachel, the Rav certified Rav Mori Bar Rachel, umanye bepurse de bavel, and he appointed him to be in charge in an authoritative position and as a minister, Rashi says, shaitrim in bavel, because he held that since his mother Imay Yisrael, his mother Rachel, was a born Yid, this allows him to be appointed into this position. Apparently, because his father was not Jewish, so Rav needed to make that ruling that the fact that his mother was Jewish, that's sufficient to allow his appointment. Now that works well according to the first version of Al-Gemara, but according to the second version that Rava was the father of Rav Mori Bar Rachel, why did they get into all those complications? His father was Rava. So why did Rav need to set down the special ruling to certify him to this position? His father was a Yid. Says Mar Dilma, perhaps Turei Mori Bar Rachel Havod, there were actually two people with the same name, Mori Bar Rachel. So the one mentioned over there in the story with Rav in Maseches Yevamos was actually the one born through this whole story, and his father was not Jewish. And therefore Rav needed to issue the special allowance to appoint him. Whereas in our Gemara here, according to this version, that Rava was the father of Rav Mori Bar Rachel, was speaking of a different individual with a similar name. In any case, so it was Rava who's going to teach us the following halacha. Either he was the brother or the father of Mori Bar Rachel. Have a masna lo shmaita. So he would teach the following halacha, Mishmei de Rav Yochanan liftur. He would teach us this following halacha, the name of Yochanan, to completely exempt the mechamer from all liability. Meaning, certainly it's asr, we learn it from a pasuk, one is not meant to do a malacha, in conjunction with an animal, meaning to lead an animal while he's carrying a load, or any malacha for that matter. But as when it comes to liability, to chiyuv, to einish, to penalty, there's no skila, there's no chatas, and even no malchus. Explains the Gemara. If one leads his animal on Shabbos, potter miklum, he's completely exempt. Why? If he does it inadvertently, there's no chayav chatas. As we said earlier, the Torah equates and connects the entire concept of chatas, and we're meant to derive it from avodah zarah. And just as avodah zarah involves an actual masa, an act, an account of the transgressor, there's no chayav chatas unless there's a masa done, a personal action, as opposed to the behemoth's act. So there's no chayav chatas. Likewise, if he does it intentionally, there's no chiv of skila desnan, as we learned in the Mishnah. Ha mechalas haShabbos. If one is mechalas haShabbos bedover, shechayov and al shigigosei chatos, chayov mal zdoin eskila. So we learn from there that the two things are related. If one is over, when it comes to something that there's a chiv chatos, there will be a chiv skila if it is done intentionally. Ha ein chayov and al shigigosei chatos. This implies that if there is no chiyav chatas on the shigaga of this thing, for instance, mechamer, as we just established, there's no chatas. When it's done unwillingly, unintentionally, ein chayovin, as doing a skila, therefore there's no skila when it is done bezadin. So two things go hand in hand. Chatas and skila are interconnected, interrelated. When there is no chatas, there's no skila. So that checks off the chatas, checks off the skila. Here comes the chiddush. Belav Nami lamechayev. He won't even mechayev malchus as a result of being over, transgressing the law. Why? Da'av le'lav shenitan la'zheres mises pesn. Because this law, which is le'isase kol melacha ato bincha bitecha avdech v'amoscha uvem techa, this is a general law and it is applied to all melachas on Shabbos. It is meant to forewarn the individual, don't do a melacha, because you'll be liable to misas bezdin. You can go ahead and earn the death penalty through bezdin. And the pasuk, the Torah will never punish somebody without pre-warning them. Where's the warning? This pasuk is the warning for all the misas bezdin applied to malachas of Shabbos. And we know, v'cholav shenitan la'saras misas bezdin ein leikin olav. Whenever lav is meant to be applied to warn one for the pending Mises Bezdin, if he shall transgress that Isser, this love is focused on that, it's intended for that, it's already pre-used for that, it cannot be applied to teach us Malkus. Therefore, the Machamer fellow will not get Malkus, because the love that teaches us one may not use an animal for Malacha is the same love that's warning every individual, don't do those 39 of us Malachas, because you will get Mises Bezdin. So it's already used for that and not available to teach us that there will be Malkus in a case where, for some reason, there is no Mises Bezdin, like Mechamer. Let's take a look at Rashi inside. Seven lines from the bottom, beginning with the words Lazharas Mises Bezdin, explains Rashi, Dishar Malacha is the Shabbos, because all the other Malachas of Shabbos, Namim Haikra Nafkul Lazhar, they also derive their warning from this exact Pasuk. Hilkach Lazharas Mises Bezdin Nitan. Apparently, this Pasuk is given for azhara, for warning about the pending Mises Bezdin, should one transgress those malachas. The loy onash misa elm ken hizr. Certainly the Torah does not give misa unless Hashem warns the person, hilkach ikar azharasai. The main point and purpose of this warning, of this pasuk, is l'makam sheyesh by misa asai. It's coming for the place where there is misa. For the ordinary malacha, v'loy l'malkas, and cannot be applied to introduce to us the concept of malkas by mechamer who does not have Mises Bezdin. So according to Rabbi Yochanan, there's no chatas, there's no skila, nor is there malchus. Continues the Gemara in Amud Beis. Vafilu l'man d'amar leikin. Even according to the Shita in Maseches Makos, who holds that this type of love will result in a person receiving the 39 malchus, 39 lashes, there it's different. Here it's different. By Mechamer, this will not apply. Lichtav rachman lo yisasar kol malach ubehem techa. The pasuk puts in an extra word. The person could have simply said, don't do all malachas, ubem techa, meaning also machamer, which is a type of malacha which is done in coordination with one's animal. And therefore, we will assume that if a person does machamer, he will get malchus on account of this love. Atolamali. Why does the pasuk insert an extra word? Lo yisasaka malacha, and then it says ata, and then afterwards it says behem techa. It's coming to teach us something. that we want to differentiate between a malacha that the person himself does personally, where he will get an einish, as opposed to the malacha that he did ubehemtecha, that he does in coordination with his behema, which that's an entirely different category of malacha. In that type of malacha, there is no o malchus. Ata lamali. Why does the pasuk say ata? Hu niyo demachayiv? It is only something which he himself personally does, which results in chiv, in liability, in punishment. Bam toyim lemachayiv. However, a malacha which is done together with his behema, that does not result in liability. So certainly it's asr. But as Rashi will tell us a lashon here, it's not a lav gomor. It's not a complete lav, which results in malchus. Let's take a look at Rashi inside, from the top line here. Even according to the other shid, who holds that this type of lav, which is applied to, for warning, for the impending misa liability, even according to the mandama, holds that that type of lav will also result in malchus when there is no misa for some reason. Says Rashi, hocha, here in our case, afilu lav leka. You can't even say there's a lav. The ilda suri, amalocha, because if you propose, the Torah here is coming to warn for this case of a malacha that's done through himself and his behemoth together, if that's the case, why didn't the Torah simply say, don't do any malacha with your behemoth? My ata, why add that word ata? Mashma ata levadecha, ubehemtecha levadecha. The Torah is separating you from your behemoth. Only you, meaning a malacha that a person individually does, himself, personally, will result in an einish, whether it's chata, skila, or malchus. But ubehemtecha levado, that falls into its own category and has its own dinim, and there's no malchus when a person coordinates the malacha through his behem. Concludes Rashi, behemtei b'malacha nasa adei behemtei, so the malacha that's done in coordination with this animal does not result in malchus because it's not a lav gomor, a complete, a comprehensive lav which brings about malchus. So in summary, regarding the machamer leading an animal who's carrying a load on Shabbos, we have various approaches. We have the first approach in the Gemara, which was actually on the Gemara Kufnun Gimel, where Machamer's first version was that we regard this like his malacha, like the person's malacha. Therefore, b'shagik, there's a chatos, b'mezeh this skila. According to the other pshat in the Gemara, Rava's shita, he holds that it's completely your animal's act. There's no chiyuv, not chatos, not skila. Now we began today with another version of Rami Bar Chama, who holds we split the things. When it comes to shagik, he's potter. When it comes to mezeh, he has skila. And we conclude Rabbi Yochanan, who maintains that this act is completely attributed to his animal. There's no einish at all. There's no liability at all to the person leading the animal. There's no chatas. There's no skila. And likewise, there's no malchus. Continues the Gemara. Higia l'chatzar chitzoyna. Getting back to our Mishnah, where a person had his donkey carry his load for him. So as soon as he gets to a safe area, he gets into the first portion of the city, he's meant to remove the loads of his animal. What if his animal was laden with glass utensils? And as we're going to learn, Cern was speaking about muktza objects, which he can't manually remove. So what does he do? How does he have them slide down without breaking? Maybe he brings pillows, mattresses, he brings all types of cushions, places it underneath it, unties those ropes, and allows the sacks to slide down and have a soft landing. Says Marva Anan Tanan, but we learned in our Mishnah, Noitel Sakim on Atom B'Shabbos. He can go ahead and remove those sakim, those kalim on Atom B'Shabbos, the utensils which are movable, which are not mukta. Why does he need to go ahead and orchestrate this whole arrangement? Have the cushions and untie the ropes and have them slide down. Why can't he simply remove the schuchis kalim from his animal? Says the Gemara, Ka'amar Rav Huna. Rav Huna must be speaking about the karni du umna, these horn-shaped pieces of glass that the umman will use. This is the blood letter. So these utensils are mukta. The lechazile, they're not suitable for him. Ashi says they're moos, they're repulsive. So they're mukta. So you can't manually remove them from his animals. You must place those cushions underneath, untie the ropes, and have them slide down. Says the Gemara Valkumavata, Klimeyachonai. How can you allow him to place the Karim Viksases underneath these mukta items? He's doing something wrong. He's being mavatal kli. He's nullifying those kalim from their designated use. Meaning, since he's allowing the muksa to fall on them, they become nullified from their preparedness. They can't be used anymore on Shabbos. Rashi says it's daimet seiser. The Rabban one can't do that because it's similar to destroying, demolishing something on Shabbos. He's taking something which is perfectly usable and he's rendering it unusable. He's being mavatal the kli from its use. Says the Gemara B'Shlifi Zutri. Apparently, we're speaking about small-sized loads where he orchestrates things in a manner where the glass, which are mukta, are not going to be situated on the karim the ksasais long term. Rashi describes it as piling up some pillows, and he has the bundle of these glass mukta items land on the first pillow, pulls out the first pillow, shakes it off. It drops onto the second pillow, pulls out the second pillow, drops down to the third, till it gets down to the ground. So ultimately, the pillow will not stay underneath the muksa. It's only a temporary bittul, a temporary nullification, which would be mutter. Says the Gemara, Meisvei. We have a kashmar brice. Hoyse be'emte tuna tevel v'ashashiyos. If his animal was laden with tevel, which is muksa, because the truma meisvei would not separate it, and therefore it's asa b'achila, so it's muksa. V'ashashiyos. These pieces of glass. Mater es achavolim. What does he do? He needs to untie the ropes. Vasak neiflim. And the sacks just slide down and fall down on their own. Vafa pishem eshtabrin. Even though they're going to break, even though the glass in these sacks are going to break, this is the proper method of doing it. So the Gemara's kasha is, what about placing cushions beneath these muksa items? Why don't we allow that in this case? Says the Gemara, it's not a kasha Rav Huna. Why? Because Hasam Bekulsa. We're speaking there about glass, which are they're large pieces of glass, which are cut down to size, used as window panes. So Rashi explains, since they're going to be broken at any rate, therefore there's no hefset, there's no property loss, there's no real damage taking place by allowing them to fall down and break. Therefore we don't allow him to place those cushions beneath these glass muksa items, because ultimately it's a temporary nullification of those cushions. It's a partial bittul kli meyachanai. It's not long term, as we said. He's going to shake it off, but it's a temporary nullification. That's only mutter when there's a real need, when there's a hefset, when there's property loss taking place. But in this case, since those pieces of glass need to be broken down to size at any rate, so there's no heter placing cushions underneath them. Just untie the ropes, let them fly down and crack on landing. Says Gemara Dei Kanami. We have a diuk as well that we're speaking about these types of pieces of glass, like Tani Dumi the Tevel, because the Brisa lists them together. Tevel with Hashashiyos. And we meant to connect the two things. Ma Tevel de Lechazile. Just as Tevel is not something which is suitable, meaning even during the ordinary weekday, you can't just eat Tevel. You need to separate it from Trumas and Maishas to make it edible. Likewise here, by the Ashashis, apparently we're speaking about Lechazile. We're speaking about something which is not suitable to be used as is. It needs to be cut down to shape, to size. So since there's no real hefsa taking place when it falls down and cracks, we don't allow him to place those cushions. Says the Gemara, okay, but how do we understand the wording of the Braisa? If we're speaking about something which the breakage does not result in loss, so why does the Braisa say, well, we don't allow him to place underneath cushions, even though, despite the fact that they break? What do you mean? The breakage here is really irrelevant. Why does the Braisa say, despite the fact that they break? Breakage here is no big deal, because it's not bringing about a hefset. Says the Gemara, well, some sort of loss is taking place. Rashi explains that, despite the fact that they need to be broken apart, but when they break in this manner, there are some splinters that are going to be formed, and he's going to lose that bit of material. So a minor hefset, some sort of minor loss, is resulting here. And the Bryce is telling us, We don't reckon with that. We don't allow him to place the cushions underneath to spear him this minute, insignificant loss. Perhaps I would think lehefsed mut, not mechashashu, the chacham concern even about a hefsed mut, a small loss. Come on, Shmuel, the Baisa teaches us, no. We're not concerned about that, and it doesn't justify placing kelim underneath, which will nullify them, b'mavata kli me'echana, even for a small, short amount of time. So the point here is that breaking of these pieces of glass doesn't result in a large-scale hefset. And the fact that there is a small hefset taking place, that doesn't justify placing cushions underneath. But in a case where there's a large-scale loss taking place, such as in the halacha of Rav Huna, who told us about the clay schuchis, which are going to fall down and break, over there certainly we allow him to place the cushions underneath, the kelim, and shake them off as described earlier. Tanya Rav Shimon Chayoymer, Hoyse behemtoy to unis shlif shal tfuah. What if his behemah was laden with a load of tfuah? How does he get it off? Maniach roisha tachter, he places his head underneath the load, umesalkal etzal achar, and he maneuvers the load over to the other side, v'unoifu me'elov, and it just falls down on its own. So despite the fact that we're speaking about tevel, Rashi says, we're speaking about something which is inedible, it's muktzah. But as we learned earlier, in the Masechta, if a person moves around muktzah in an indirect manner using his head, there's no isser, and therefore he can do it in this manner and have it slide off his animal. Continues the Gemara, Chamoyru Shurim Gamliel. The donkey of Rabban Gamliel, Hoysa Tu'una Devash, so she was laden with honey. He did not want to unload the animal Ad Moitzei Shabbos until after Shabbos. The Gemara soon will explain exactly what the difficulties were. But he waited until Moitzei Shabbos, and what happened? The Moitzei Shabbos Mesa, she died. So by the time he came around to unload, she was no longer. Says the Gemara, Vanantanan, but haven't we learned that there's no concern? Noitel Kelim and Talmish Anitalim. One can remove movable items from his animal. It's no concern. So why couldn't he simply unload the honey? The honey is not muktzah. Says the Gemara, yes it is. Kishe Hidvish. We're speaking about honey which was spoiled, which is muktzah. Therefore, he couldn't manually remove it. Says the Gemara, Hidvish? L'may Chazi. What is it suitable for? Why is he carrying, why is he bringing spoiled honey? The Ksisa the Gamli. It is used to soothe the rubbed out skin of a camel. So that's the point and purpose of this honey. Nevertheless, it's muktzah on Shabbos, as the Ritva says, because one cannot conduct this type of activity on Shabbos. He can't do refuah to his animal. So it's considered to be unsuitable, useless, and muktzah. Says the Gemara, v'yatur chavolim, v'yiplus sakin. Why can we simply untie the ropes and have the sacks slide off his animal? Mitzteru ziki. He was concerned that the containers will break apart and the honey will flow out. Says the Gemara, v'yavikar v'ksasis, v'yaniach tateim. Why couldn't he simply place those cushions underneath? Untie the ropes and have them slide on the cushions. Mitamfi. He was concerned that the honey will spill out and soil the cushions. V'kumavato klimi chanei. Once again, we run into that problem because if he's soiling the cushions and they're no longer suitable to be used on Shabbos, he's nullifying its preparedness. He's being mevatel the use of that kli, which is Issa d'Rabbanan. Therefore, he had no choice. Says the Gemara, okay, there's an Issa d'Rabbanan, but on the other side of the equation, there's another Issa. By leaving this load sitting on his donkey, he's being metzar, he's causing distress to his animal. Ve'ika tzar b'alechayim. There's tzar happening to the animal. And the Gemara is assuming that Tzar Balei Chaim is an Issa min HaTorah. So this certainly overrides the Issa de Rabbanon of the Mevatel Kli Me'echonai. So this should allow him to undo those ropes, have him slide down on the cushions, despite the fact that the cushion will get soiled and become nullified, which is Issa de Rabbanon, which is meant to be suspended in face of the Issa de Raisa of causing distress to his animal. So the Gemara Kasavar, he held Tzar Balei Chaim de Rabbanon, that causing distress to an animal is Issa d'Rabbanan. So we have one Issa d'Rabbanan in the face of another Issa d'Rabbanan, and therefore one does not negate the other. He left its status quo until Matzoi Shabbos. Continues the Gemara, Abaya Ashkeche Leila Rabba. Abaya encountered, noticed that Rabba was doing the following thing. The Kameshashif Leila Bray, he was rubbing his son, playfully, Agaba d'Chamra, along the back of a donkey on Shabbos. So he's doing this playful activity, and Abaye challenged him. Amale, komishtamish marba balachayim. Aren't you making use of a balachay? We know that one is not meant to ride on an animal on Shabbos. This is a concern that by doing so, it might be tempted to pull a branch off a tree and use it as a whip. Likewise, a person can climb a tree on Shabbos, can use a tree on Shabbos for a similar concern that he might rip off a fruit, for instance. So one cannot be mishtamish, cannot make use of an animal or of a tree on Shabbos. The question is, what about indirect use? It's dodim, such as this example of rubbing oneself playfully on the side of a donkey. Is that also included in the isser of using an animal or not? So again, Abaye noticed that Rabbah was making use of an animal in an indirect manner. And he challenged this. He says, Amalei komishtamish marbe balichayim. You're using an animal on Shabbos? Amalei, so Rabbah responded, Stodanein. I'm merely using the side of the animal, meaning it's indirect use. It's not riding on the animal. That's not derech. Tashmish et chachamim did not prohibit this. Stodanein. But stodanein like God's Rabbanon. And regarding indirect use, Rabbanon did not make an issue. Let's see Rashi inside. So with the lines get wide, so right before that, three lines before the wide lines begins the Rashi, the Meshavshif Librei. So he was rubbing the son Agab the Chamra on the back of the donkey, Beshabbos, L'shashe Atinaik, to amuse the child. And Abaye challenged him, Kamashtamash Rabbe Balichayim, you're using an animal, Utanan, we're going to the Mishnah in a Beitza, Loi Reich Van Agabe Behema, we don't ride on an animal, void in the Chol Tashmish. Likewise, any type of use is also. So Rabbi responded, this is not ordinary use, it's the Adin. She'enim Arkivei Olof. I'm not riding him on the actual animal. Elam Hashav Shafei Atzidei Gaboy. I'm rubbing him on the side of his back. This is not your typical use. V'rabbanu le'gozribo, the Chacham did not apply this. Says the Gemara. Munah Temra. So apparently this is Rabbi continuing and says, what is the raya? That when it comes to indirect use, there's no Issa d'Rabbanu. This is our Mishnah. Matires hachavolim. So he's untying the ropes, vasakin neuflin, and he allows the sacks to slide off his animal. My love, aren't we speaking about bechever gevalki? Chever means a pair of sacks. So it's a double load, one on each side of the animal. Gevalki means that they're connected together, tied together. The only way to actually remove these sacks is by getting close to the animal and squeezing those sacks together and removing them as one. Davalut Staden. So he's leaning on the animal as he's proceeding with this removal. Apparently, even though he is leaning on the animal, so-called using the animal, but it's indirectly. Ut Staden like Gazir Rabbana. Apparently, when it comes to Staden, there's no Gzera. There's no incident to use an animal in this manner. Says Marloi. Bechever Agalvaki. We're not speaking about this type of load. We're speaking about a double load. Chever is this double load. Agalavki, which is connected to each other. The two loads, the two sacks, are connected to each other through some type of peg, some type of nail, which is connecting them. So the way to remove, to unload the donkey, is a very simple matter. You just go pull out the nail, the peg, and the sacks slide down. So there's no need to lean and maneuver oneself alongside the donkey, the loy habut staden, there's no indirect use whatsoever. Inami, alternatively, belakta. We're speaking about another form of a double load. Rashi says there's some sort of wooden, bent wooden peg there that's keeping together both sacks. So you simply release that peg and allow them to slide down, and there's no need to rub oneself and to maneuver oneself alongside the animal. So you have no raya in this Mishnah regarding the halacha of staden. Continues the more Esve. So Abaye proceeded to ask Akasha from the following Mishnah in Mesecha Sukkah, where apparently even indirect use of a tree, speaking about using of a tree here, would be awesome. The Mishnah says as follows. So if a person built his sukkah, constructed his roof, the schach of the sukkah, partially on a tree, shtayim b'di adam, so two sides of the schach were being supported by man-made walls. Va'achas b'ilan, the third side, was leaning on a tree. Kshera. So the sukkah is kosher. However, there are some restrictions. Ve'ein oyin lo b'yantav. You can't go up to the sukkah on yantav. Ashi explains that they used to actually use this schach. They used to place their kelim on it, their pots, their pans, on the roof of the sukkah. So since this roof, this schach, is being supported on one side, a third of its support is coming from a tree. So he's making use of a tree on Yom Tov, albeit indirectly, stodim of a tree. He's not actually using the tree. He's using the schach, which is leaning on the tree, which is actually leaning on some, Rashi says, some poles which were drilled in to the tree. So you have a tree, you have some kanim, some type of poles which were drilled into the tree. You have the schach being supported by those poles. So it's an indirect use of the tree. We see from this Mishnah, one cannot use the schach on Yom Tov because he's indirectly using a tree. The Gemara here is comparing indirect use of a tree, the tzadim of a tree, to the tzadim of a behemah. So this is the kasha that Abayi presents to Rabba. My love, the chok baby ilan. Are we not speaking about that he actually drilled into the tree? In which case, the use of the schach, which is positioned on those poles which are drilled into the tree, the avalut stodim, is considered to be indirect use of the tree. Ut stodin asurin. Apparently, we see that even direct use is also. We're not speaking about that case. We're speaking about direct use of the tree. The kafili ilan, he actually maneuvered the tree itself, he bent it into shape. V'anach sichuch ilavei. And he actually supported this schach by placing it on the tree itself. The chamashtamash b'ilon. It's a direct use of the tree. It's not indirect. It's not stodden. Therefore, it's us. Says Marihach, if that's the case, that he's directly being supported by the tree, eima seifa. Let's take a look at the next halach in the Mishnah. The Mishnah describes another construction project. Shalosh b'dei odom achas b'ilon. So he has a schach being supported on three sides by man-made walls. Va'achas b'ilon. And the fourth side is leaning on the tree, k'shera, the sukkah is kosher b'ilon b'yomtev. And he can go ahead and use the sukkah on yomtev. And apparently, he's even going to use the schach. He's going to place his pots on the schach without any concern. V'i de kafi l'ilon. If we are speaking where he actually bent the tree into shape and used it to support the schach directly, amai ilon b'yomtev. Why is he allowed to use the sukkah on Yom Tov? He's directly using a tree. Says Gemara, Ve'elo mai tzadin asur. One second. Now, according to you, it's tzadin asur, meaning that we're speaking that it wasn't directly placed on the tree. It was placed indirectly on the tree. For instance, there were some poles which were inserted in the tree, and the schach was sitting on those poles, in which case it's an indirect use. It was merely tzadin. If that's the case of the Mishnah, how is that going to help matters? Seif seif amai oil lo b'yomtev. If that's the case, at the end of the day, why would this be any different than the first case of the Mishnah? If the schach is actually leaning on the tree, what does it matter whether two sides are man-made or three sides are man-made? In the ratio of the Mishnah, we learned that when two sides are man-made and the third one is actually being supported by the tree, then it's also to use that schach. If three sides, three walls are man-made and supporting the schach, and the fourth side of the schach is being supported by the tree, it would be mutter to use on Yom Tov. Now, what difference does it make whether it's this case or that case? If you hold that stodim asur, according to you, Abayi, that holds stodim asurim, and the scenario described here is merely a case of stodim. So again, stodim means indirect use of the tree. You have a tree, you have the poles inserted, and you have the schach sitting on those poles. So it's indirect use of the tree. And that is the situation according to Abayi. So what difference does it make? How many walls are present? At any rate, this schach is being supported, albeit indirectly, by the tree. So why is it safe as a mutter? Meaning, according to you, Abayi, why is it any better? Says the Gemara, Elo hasam begav osa praschana. Apparently, we're speaking about a case where the branches are coming out in all directions. So he doesn't really need to position them and maneuver them. And he didn't actually maneuver them to support the schach. And guess what? The schach is not actually being supported by the tree at all. In the sefer, in the second case of that Mishnah. The ilam gufei, because the actual tree, doifim ba'amu d'shavi, he merely fashioned it. He's using it as a wall of the sukkah. And the schach is not leaning on it. It's not being supported by that tree. And therefore, the Mishnah says, there's no problem using it on Yom Tov. So, the difference between the Reisha and the Seif is very simple. In the Reisha, the tree is supporting the schach, whether directly, according to Rabbah, because indirectly would be mutter, whether indirectly, according to Abaye, because he holds even indirect support is asr. That's the ratio of the Mishnah. As opposed to the Sefer of the Mishnah, which allows use of this schach, is simply speaking about a case where the schach does not need the tree for support. It's being fully supported on three sides by man-made walls. The fourth side has it features a tree there with some branches, which are being used as a wall to enclose the sukkah, but they're not coming into contact with the schach. The schach is not being supported by those branches. There's no concern of using a tree. Deikonami. In the wording of the Mishnah, we actually have this pretty clear. Diktani. Let's make a diak. The Mishnah says zeh klal. This is the rule. Kol she'ilu yinotel ilan. If the tree would theoretically be removed, v'yichoylo lamoid, and the sukkah, the schach, could withstand that removal, could stand on its own, doesn't need the tree for support because it's not being supported by the tree. So if you remove it, the schach would just stand and would not even budge, would not even move, would not even shake because the schach is actually not relating to the tree at all, not directly or indirectly. This allows the use of this sukkah on yantav. Shema mina. Apparently, we're speaking about such a case where there is no support from the tree to the schach. So in conclusion, we have no real raya from this Mishnah one way or the other. The Mishnah which doesn't allow using the schach being supported by a tree can either be speaking about direct use of the tree or indirect use. We didn't really conclude one way or the other, depending, it all depends on your opinion. But in a case where there's no support taking place at all, it's mutter. Lema katanoi, perhaps this discussion whether indirect use of a tree is mutter on Shabbos and Yontif is perhaps based on a machlekes tanoi. Ein oin lo b'yontif, one may not go up to the sukkah, use the sukkah on Yontif. Of Shimon lezo oimer, mishum ramei, oin lo b'yontif, one may yes use the sukkah on Yontif. Rashi actually says, why is the term oila? Why do we apply the term of going up when it comes to using the sukkah? He says that most of the sukkahs were up on the roofs. That's why the Gemara and the Mishnah generally apply the term of going up, ascending to the sukkah when describing the use of a sukkah. Okay, getting back to this brisa, Tanakama says you can't use the sukkah, and the Ramei says you can. Now, apparently, we're not speaking about direct use of a tree. All would agree that it would be asa. My love, apparently, the point of dispute here is based on this type of scenario of tzadim, indirect use of a tree. The ma'asav at tzadim asurim, Tanakama holds indirect use of a tree is asur. Ma'asav mutar, Ramei holds it's mutar. So apparently this discussion is actually machlekes tanoim. Amar Abaye loy. No, the kuli alma tzadim asurim all agree that indirect use of a tree is asur. V'acha betzidei tzadim kamifliki. This machlekes here is pertaining to tzidei tzadim. What does that mean? A double indirectness. For instance, Rashi explains that at this point in the Gemara, we hold that if they have a tree, and you took a kana, some type of stick, some type of reed, and you inserted it into the tree. So this kana is considered tzadim. Using this kana is indirect using of the tree. And if you place a schach on this kana, which is connected to the tree, the use of that schach is doubly removed from the tree. It's removed two steps from the tree. It's a double indirectness. It's called tzidei tzadim. Says Abaye, all agree that merely tzadim, indirect use of a tree, for instance, if you would use this pole itself, or in the case of the animal, if you rub yourself on the side of the animal, that's called tzadim, all agree. That's considered like using the tree itself properly, like using the animal itself properly. And incidentally, perhaps the reason why the Chacham won't machr, according to this shita, when it comes to using a tree or an animal, as opposed to where we find, let's say, by muktzah, one can indirectly move muktzah. Why is this different? Because perhaps here it's more severe. The reason why the Chacham disallowed using an animal or a tree was concerned that it might lead you to a malacha de'oiraisa, might pick off a branch, might pick off a fruit off the tree. So since it's in the context of a possible issur min haTorah, perhaps that's the reason the Chacham were machmir, were stringent, all across the board, even indirect use, shalai kederach, using it in an uncustomary fashion, rubbing oneself against an animal, using a tree indirectly, even there the Chachamim applied an Isser. So perhaps that's a Svar Abaye. In any case, Abaye tells us, all agree indirect use is Asr. The Machlek is here. And this Braisa is concerning a double indirectness. Tzidei Tzadim. Vahocha, but Tzidei Tzadim Kamiflik. Ma'ar Savar, Tzidei Tzadim Asr. Tanakam holds it's Asr. Ma'ar Savar, Rameh holds Tzidei Tzadim Mutar. Rav Amar, he says, no, let's not make this distinction between Tzadim and Tzidei Tzadim. They're both interrelated. Man da'asar bit tzadim, the shita that would say tzadim is asar, asar nama bit tzidei tzadim. Likewise, you'd say a double indirectness would also be asar. Because the point here is that Chacham applied their isar all across the board. Man da shari bit tzidei tzadim, the shita that would allow tzidei tzadim, shari nama bit tzadim would also allow by tzadim. You can't differentiate between one or the other. Esreivra mershashil rav. So Rishash challenged Rav. You don't differentiate between a single indirectness and a double indirectness. The Braisa says, not yoseid bo'ilan. If a person inserted a nail into a tree, v'tola bo'kalkola, and he hung up this basket containing his Eruv, we're speaking about Eruv Tchumen. So Eruv Tchumen allows a person to travel further than the standard boundary, which is 2,000 Amma. He places, for instance, some bread at the end of that boundary, making that place into his Mokim Shvisa, his Shabbos residence. Because a person's mind and his focus is on his food, it sustains him. That becomes his Dira, his Mokim Shvisa. And therefore he can go from there another 2,000 Amma. So if a person places his Erev into a basket and hangs it up onto a nail which is inserted on a tree, so it depends. Lama lama sarat fachim, if this basket was suspended above 10 fachim off the ground, any Erev, the Erev is not valid because his makam shvisa is where? Down on the floor. Down on the ground in Rishus Aravim. He can't access his food, which is sitting up in the basket. This basket is Rishus Ayachad. It's an entirely different domain. Rashi explains the basket is 4 tefachim wide. And we know it's suspended 10 tefachim in the air. So it has its own class. It's a Rishus Ayachad. He can't make a makam shvisa on the ground below if he can't access his food, which is up in the air. Therefore, the Erev is not valid. If the basket is within 10 tefachim to the ground, in which case he has full access to the food from his position on the floor, Eruv Eruv is considered to be a valid Eruv, and that's considered to be his Makom Shvisa, his Shabbos residence. Let's analyze the price. Time of the Naatz Yosed B'ilam. Apparently this is only true when he hung up his basket onto a Yosed, which he attached to the tree. Time of the Naatz Yosed B'ilam, it's only because he affixed, he inserted this peg into the tree and hung his basket on that peg, and therefore he has full access to the content of the basket because the basket here is very much removed, doubly removed from the tree. There is a peg on the tree, which is tzadim, and then we have the basket which is hanging on that peg. So using that basket is tzidei tzadim. Only that allows the use of the basket. Holy not, but hadn't he inserted that nail into the tree, he couldn't use the basket. Even if the basket was low, within 10 tefachim to the ground, it wouldn't work because he could never use the basket on Shabbos because he's indirectly using a tree. The basket is hung on the tree itself. Using the basket is considered to be indirectly using the tree. So since he has no access to his food, the Erev doesn't work. Says the Rabbah, hi Tana, the Ka'asa, but Stodim. Apparently, this Tana says that Stodim is Asr. Indirect use of a tree is Asr. So the basket, which is directly affixed to the tree, would not be permitted to be used. Vikashara bitzidet Stodim. Nevertheless, he allows. When it's a double indirectness, when the basket is sitting on a peg, which is sitting on the tree. So we see clearly there's that distinction between Stodim, which is Asr, and Tzidet Stodim, which is Mutter. Amra Papa, no. And we're speaking about a kalkola, a basket, which has a narrow mouth. In which case, in order to access his bread, he needs to shake the whole area. The bahadi, the shakalei la'erev, when he's removing his erev from the basket, kamanad le'le ilon, he's going to be shaking up that tree, become a shamash, be ilon gufei. Thereby resulting in actually using the tree because he's shaking the tree as he goes along. Therefore, the Braisi here insists that he hang the basket strictly on a peg, which is inserted in the tree, in which case, using that basket, despite the fact that it has a narrow opening, would not really directly shake the tree. Perhaps it won't shake the tree at all. Perhaps even if it causes the tree to shake, but it's indirect shaking, it's not considered as though he's actually shaking the tree and making direct use of the tree. So that's the Pshat of the Braisa. Perhaps there's no difference between Stadim and Tzidei Stadim. If Stadim would be Mutter, then even Tzidei Stadim would be Mutter. Here, the reason why we don't allow to hang it on the tree, it's not because hanging on the tree would involve studim. It's not indirect use, it's direct use of the tree. Because he's going to be shaking the actual tree as he pulls out the bread. It's considered to be mishtamash bi'ila. Therefore, he needs to specifically hang it on a peg. In which case, there will be no concern. So Rav Papa answered the kasha from the Braisa on Rava. Rava told us there's no difference between studim and tzidei studim. Rav Shashi said, well, this Braisa seems to imply that there is a difference between tzedim and tzedet tzedim. We see that on the tree itself he can't use the basket because it's tzedim, but on the peg he can because it's tzedet tzedim. Says Rav Papa, the reason why he can't use it when it's attached to the tree itself is not because of tzedim, it's because he's actually using the tree itself. But generally speaking, there's no difference between tzedim and tzedet tzedim. The Gemara concludes, v'hilchasa, tzedim asurim, tzedet tzedim etarim. Indirect use of a tree or an animal is indeed asur, like Abaye's opinion, but doubly removed, tzidei tzedim, double indirectness would be mut. Omar Vashi, hashta da amris tzedim asur. Now that you've established that indirect use is asur, one must be careful in the following scenario. Hai darga de midla. This darga, this ladder, which is used to climb up to this hut, which is constructed high up in the air, next to a tree, shouldn't place his ladder leaning on the palm tree, the havlut stadim, because he's indirectly using the palm tree when he rises up the ladder. Rather, he should place his ladder leaning on the pegs, which are protruding from the palm tree. In which case, he's going to be using tzidet stadim. Why? Because the peg itself attached to the tree is stadim. It's a protrusion of the tree. It's an indirect use of the tree. And the ladder, which is sitting on that peg, making use of that ladder, is a double indirectness. It's tzidei tzedim. V'chi solik, when he ascends up the ladder, lo yilenach kari agav zoi, he shouldn't place his foot on the actual peg. In which case, he's going to be using the tree indirectly. It's tzedim and it's also ela, rather, lisnach akonin. He should place his foot on the konim, on the sticks, Rashi says the rungs of the ladder, or the kanim, which are coming out of, protruding out of the poles there, whatever it is, he's not using the actual tree itself, nor the peg on the tree, because using the peg of the tree would be considered indirect use of the tree, which is tzedim. Rather, he should use the ladder itself, which is tzidei tzedim and mutter. So in summary, using a behema, or an animal, or a tree on Shabbos, if it is indirect use, according to Abaye, it's asur, according to Rabbi, it's mutter. What about tzidei tzedim? Abaye said, well, all agree that tzedim is asur, machlokes tanoim applies to tzidei tzedim. Rabbi maintained that the same machlokes that applies to tzidei tzedim will apply to tzedim. We don't differentiate between one and the other. The halacha concludes that tzedim indeed would be asur, and tzidei tzedim would be mutter. Okay, time for a brief review of today's daf. We began discussion of mechamer, a person leads an animal who's carrying a load on Shabbos. What is the result of this Isser? We know that it's Asser, but is there a Einish, a liability? Is there a Chattas? Is there a Skila? Is there a Malkus? We have three approaches. One approach in the Gemara is, yeah, we regard it as though it's his personal act. We attribute the Maisa to the person. This is Rami Bar Chama's approach, and therefore he's Chayev Chattas, he's Chayev Skila. Rav, on the other hand, says he's Potter. Rami Bar Chama, in the second version, says Chattas, he's Potter. Skili would be chayv. The Gemara concluded, Rav Yochanan holds that this ma'isa is completely, entirely attributed to the animal, so explains the Ramban, and therefore the person himself incurs no penalty, no punishment, there's no chattas, there's no skila, nor is there malchus. The Gemara proceeded describing this person who's unloading his animal. We had a chiddush from Rav Huna that temporarily speaking one can place some cushions underneath the muksa, which he intends to shake off. And the Gemara concluded this is strictly in a case where there's going to be a hefset. The person is going to incur loss. Otherwise, this is not allowed. We proceeded with indirectly using animals or trees. Abaye says it would be asr. Rava says it would be mutter. We concluded, tzadin is aser, tzidit tzadin is mutter.